You are listening to Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, with your host, Randy Sutton. Welcome to this week's episode of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement. On the America Out Loud Network, I'm your host, Randy Sutton. We've got a great show for you today. We've got a very interesting guest. But before we even get to the guest, let's take a walk into the briefing room where I'm going to give you my view from the blue. Lots going on this week in law enforcement. More and more disturbing stuff on the war on cops. I'm going to talk about a couple different things that are absolutely mind-boggling. Okay, first of all, when you get to the end of the show, you're going to hear my memorial for those officers who have died in the line of duty. And one of them is Natalie Corona. And Natalie was a Davis, California police officer. She was killed in the line of duty. She was murdered. She was assassinated. She was simply, and here's what's, I mean, I'm almost speechless with what's going on concerning her murder. First of all, she was a beautiful young woman, 22 years old. Father was a cop. She always wanted to be a police officer. She was a community service officer until she got into the academy. She only got out of field training 3 weeks before her murder. And she was, her murder, she was investigating a car crash. And a guy on a bicycle targeted her, just came up behind her, no reason whatsoever, and shot her in the back. When she went down to the ground, he shot her on the ground, killed her. She gave her life in the line of duty. Now, there's more to this story. And this is where, I mean, if it isn't tragic enough about her death, she had, before she became a police officer, she had a photograph taken, professional photograph taken. And she was in this beautiful blue gown, and she was holding a thin blue line flag, which was waving in the wind. It was a beautiful photograph. And she did it as a thank you to the men and women of law enforcement who she has so much respect for. And this photograph was put out on social media when she was murdered. I saw the photograph as soon as it was released. You know, it was so sad to see the fact that she was murdered, and then to see this beautiful photograph. It was very poignant. Well, unbelievably, now this is in Davis, California, where the University of, whatever the hell it was, a group of students from, and this is the name of their organization, their school organization, the Ethnic and Cultural Affairs Commission. Now, this was a bunch of clowns, and they came out and they ripped this photograph. They called it racist. They called it triggering. They called for a safe space because of this thin blue line flag that was waving, because it is racist, and the bad police. They didn't say anything about the fact that this young woman was murdered while she was serving her community. And now, if that isn't bad enough, then Black Lives Matter Sacramento picked up on this, and they came out in saying the same thing, that this is a racist picture, that it needed to be banned, that it needed to be censored, and then they issued this wonderful edict that they wanted people to go out and get thin blue line flags, aka steal them when they saw them hanging, and bring them to them so they could make a, quote, artwork, unquote. Have you ever heard of anything so uncivilized, so reprehensible, that this organization, Black Lives Matter Sacramento, would be so insensitive to the death of a police officer to call it racist? And then two of the flags that were posted at this poor victim's funeral site were then stolen. Black Lives Matter, then after they got called on it, said, "Oh no, we just wanted it for an artwork. We weren't asking people to do anything like steal." What a bunch of garbage! What a bunch of cowards! What a bunch of punks! I can't believe that we have gotten to this point in our society where you throw out the word racist for anything. The thin blue line flag symbolizes only one thing, and that is the respect for those men and women of the profession who have given their lives in the line of duty. That's the only thing it means. It doesn't mean anything racist. But they called it the Blue Lives Matter flag, and therefore it is the antithesis of Black Lives Matter and disrespectful and racist. It's a bunch of garbage. It's a bunch of malarkey. I was very happy that some news sources reached out to me in Sacramento asking me for my opinion. So I gave both of these news sources pretty much what I'm telling you right now, and I didn't hold back, as you know that I don't do. When they edited the stories, they really, really took what I said and heavily edited it so that it would not be so powerful. You know, I get it. I understand that news sources play to their audience, and they don't want to really say anything controversial. Well, I don't believe that calling out Black Lives Matter and this group of morons calling themselves the Ethnic and Cultural Affairs Commission, tell me if that doesn't sound Orwellian to you. Making claims about racism and trying to utilize the death of this police officer for their own political agendas. I don't believe that should be controversial on the part of what I had to say. And I'm glad that I have this forum and for you to hear the unvarnished truth about what's taking place, because this is part of the war on police. While we're on this subject, I'm gonna switch over to, well, you know, let me say this. Not everybody that was at the UC Davis agreed with this bunch of idiots. In fact, it was by the president of this organization, of students really, really came out in support of law enforcement and called out this group for what they saw as the insensitivity, as well it is. So I'm going to move on to another subject. This is also part of the war on cops, and this one is going to boggle your mind. The state, there's a lawmakers in the state of New Hampshire have introduced a bill to revoke police authorization of deadly force. You heard me right. What they're trying to do is mind-boggling. They're trying to remove the provision that has been, it's literally in every single state's use of force policies. They were trying to introduce a bill that would remove the officer's authority to use deadly force in arrest situations. Well, every time a cop uses deadly force, it's practically in an arrest situation. So what they're in essence trying to do is make it easier to prosecute law enforcement, to make it illegal for an officer to use deadly force in the instance when all officers use deadly force, when there is the danger of death or serious bodily injury. But it's shocking to me that they're even entertaining this bill. Police chiefs all throughout New Hampshire are, of course, very upset about this. This is basically ending the authority to use deadly force in a state by lawful means. That is, that the law, the people making the laws are saying the cops can't use deadly force. It's the most ludicrous, insane law that I think I have ever heard, even surpassing the madness that comes out of California, state of New York, and New Jersey. This one takes the cake. I wish I had more time to talk, but we've got to get into the interview room where we're going to hear from a great guest. But this, my friends, is my view from the blue. For my active duty law enforcement officers, and probably some military as well, if you wear body armor, you want to arrest the odor. Yes, you want to arrest the odor because we know how nasty it can get. StinkyVest.com, that is where you get Arrest My Vest Spray. It's military police grade odor eliminating spray. This is amazing stuff. And you don't actually have to use it just for your vest, although it's made specifically for that. It is all natural, it has no harsh chemicals, but it's good for basically any odor eliminating at all. It's safe on your Kevlar, it is really amazing stuff, and you know how uncomfortable it can get, how hot those vests are. So check it out, stinkyvest.com, and it is the technology of odor absorbing molecules that makes this such an amazing product. Check it out, stinkyvest.com. I want to take a moment and tell you about the books that I have written and are available on Amazon.com. My first three books were all law enforcement related, and they were stories. My first was True Blue, Police Stories by Those Who Have Lived Them, followed by A Cop's Life, and then the third, True Blue to Protect and Serve. My latest book came out just in September. It's called The Power of Legacy, Personal Heroes of America's Most Inspiring People. And this was an amazing book for me to put together. They are the stories of people throughout this country, people who have done amazing things with their lives, about who their personal heroes were and how they inspired them. This is a book that I hope will touch the lives of people all over this country. If you get a chance, check it out, Amazon.com. It is The Power of Legacy, Personal Heroes of America's Most Inspiring People.
The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. It's AmericaOutloud.com, where the conversation never ends. With 24/7 streaming on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep, but it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
I have a very special guest with me in the interview room of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement. His name is Tom Sweeney. Tom is more than a 20-year veteran of law enforcement. He is currently working as a canine handler in southern Florida. But in addition to that, Tom is a dedicated canine officer. He's created a organization that assists with the medical care and end-of-life care for retired canines, and he has also written a book called Boss, the book. With me, Tom Sweeney. Tom, thanks so much for being on Blue Lives Radio. Tell me a little bit, first of all, Tom, about you and about your police career.
Well, I started in a small town of Seward, Nebraska in 2000. I worked there for 2 years, and I ended up moving down to Naples, Florida, where I'm currently serving in law enforcement, going on my 17th year here.
So you did a couple years and froze your butt off up in Nebraska and then said, no, I think I had enough of this.
Absolutely. I tried to start our canine unit up there. It was a small town. I got a lot of great experience, met a lot of great people. And it just, most small towns are, it was hard to start the canine unit. There's a lot of funding that's involved. And they decided at that time it wasn't something they could do. So I, continued to expand my horizons, and I found Naples, Florida, and, everything worked out for the best.
So tell us about your career in Naples, Florida. As a brand new officer, you had to go back through the academy, I take it?
Absolutely. We did, it was a crossover academy. So I did, two and a half weeks in St. Petersburg. And once I finished there, then I came down and I was a road patrol officer, where I also did field training once I got a little bit more experience under my belt here. And I spent about 6 years in our street gang unit. And that's where the passion to get into the canine unit actually surfaced. I had a lot of great people that helped me through the way to get to where I'm at today. And, it started in the gang unit where I saw a need for a narcotics canine. And, luckily enough, the sheriff at the time, read our executive summary and agreed to it. And that's where I was partnered with my first partner, Canine Matsu. And then from there, it's go ahead. I'm sorry.
No. Go ahead. Go continue.
Oh, and then, working Canine Matsu, we did a lot of assisting neighboring agencies, our own agency with, gang investigations that led into narcotics work, things like that. And then he was getting up into age, and I was approached by our patrol canine division, and they asked if I'd like to get a patrol canine, which I agreed to, and Matsu was subsequently retired, and that's when I was partnered with the boss.
Okay, so you had a number of years with a drug canine, and then you had a patrol canine. What's the difference between the two?
We basically call it the single purpose to a dual purpose dog. Single purpose dog is a dog that has one responsibility, one task. So it could be a single purpose explosives dog or a single purpose narcotics dog, which is what I had. We didn't do any tracking or, building searches, officer safety, anything like that. No apprehension work. I did a lot of school checks with, lockers, things like that. A lot of public demonstrations that, they're not the aggressive dog that, we utilize for patrol work. So we did a lot of public demonstrations with Matsu. And when you get into a dual purpose dog, then the dog starts getting into, they have a task, could be explosives and narcotics, but then they also do the, tracking, the building searches, article searches, handler protection and bite work and stuff like that. So it's, two different realms, basically two different animals, in my opinion, going from a single purpose to a patrol dog. It was an eye opener for sure.
So two different animals. Is that a pun? Were you being clever with me, Tom?
I was trying to throw that in there, trying to lowball you there, but.
I appreciate that.
I guess canine humor.
Canine humor. I got it.
There you go.
Now, which one do you, is there a preference that you have now that you've done both? Do you find that you would prefer to do one over the other?
Yes, I do. I wouldn't change my experiences and my time partnered with Matsu. But, being able to go out and, when we get our dogs in, we basically start from scratch. We do everything from obedience all the way up to, the handler protection, the apprehension work. And when you put all that together and then you get that first deployment where you're out there and you actually find the bad guy and, whether they, need to be apprehended physically or they just surrender. It's basically like your kid's hitting a home run in the, you know, in the World Series. It's very fulfilling, and it's something that the people that do it, the officers that have handled dogs that have done that, understand that. And that's where the, you know, the passion and the caring for these animals, that's where it comes from. You know, they're not just a tool that we use in law enforcement. They're our family. And, you know, they come to work with us, they go home with us. And I wouldn't change it. And, you know, patrol work is something that once you dabble in it, it's something that you can't shake. You want to stay doing it. And, you know, being teamed with a canine is one of the best jobs that you can have in law enforcement, in my opinion.
Well, and you guys recently suffered the tragic loss, killing of a police dog, even just several days ago on Christmas Eve. The Palm Beach County Sheriff's Office lost
correct.
A canine.
Correct. Right. Yeah, canine Seagull was killed on Christmas Eve. And that is, you know, we've done training with them in the past. We would go over there for schools, and we know some of the handlers over there. I'm not familiar with this handler, but, you know, like I said, we're all a big family, and, you know, every handler, you know, throughout the country feels his pain. And, you know, it's a devastating loss to our family and our brotherhood for sure.
No doubt. And so, With your experience, I mean, literally, you've spent a long, you know, over a decade, you know, involved with canine now. Tell us about first of all, the book. You wrote this book, Boss, the book. Tell us about that.
Yes. When I was going through my last partner, Boss, when he was diagnosed with cancer, he was retired. We battled through it, and, you know, the ups and downs, and it was a trying time for me, that's for sure. And when he passed away, there's my wife, you know, kind of pushed me in the direction of, you know, you have a lot of stories with Boss, and, you know, he was such a great family member and a great partner to you that, you know, why don't you sit down and write it all down so you have something, not only for you to refer back to, you know, as you get later on in life, but also for our son. And it kind of just started. And I took a airplane trip back home to Minnesota, where I'm originally from. And, you know, I didn't really have anything to do on the airplane. And I just thought, you know, now's a good time to start writing. And by the time we landed, I had 7 chapters written. And, you know, it was one of those things that it was kind of a healing process for me too. I took the loss of Boss very hard. You know, like I said, the roller coaster of having a family member, you know, fighting cancer. You see it. You go with them to the vet, and the ups and downs. You know, the good days, the bad days. The chemo's working. The chemo's not working. So you know, every time I took them to the vet, I thought, you know, is today the last day I'm going to see my partner? You know, am I going to have to go home and tell my son that, you know, sorry, I couldn't bring Boss back with me. You know, he passed away at the vet. Or, so it was one of those things that, you know, my wife pushed me towards writing the book. You know, I really never thought I would do that. And, it was a great, great healing tool for me. And, so far the reviews, you know, it helps out people, the other people that have been in my shoes. And, you know, we're trying to get it to, you know, write what it's like to be a canine handler and why they're so important, why they're so special, and why we need to take care of them even after they retire. And, you know, that leads us into, you know, our foundation that we started in honor of Boss.
Well, before we start talking about that, tell me a little bit about Boss. Tell me about your, you know, how that partnership came to be, and tell me some Boss stories.
Well, without getting too emotional,
you know, it's okay to get
usually,
emotional.
Usually
it's yeah, okay to get usually, emotional here.
Yeah, it happens. You know, he was it was one of those deals. Our first meeting, you know, everything, you know, like I said, is part of the book, so it's not anything that you know I haven't talked about, but you know, when he came into country, we picked him up in Miami. It was a surreal event. A lot of handlers can relate. They get the call, hey, your dog's arrived in country, you know, come down to the kennel or come down and pick him up at the airport. And, you know, when you get there, there's a kennel, a crate, and, you know, you don't know what's inside. You may have an idea, but you really don't know truly until you stick your face down there and, you know, you look at them eye to eye for the first time. And, you know, when I did that, you know, I was, you know, wet behind the ears, still green, and, you know, didn't really know what to expect. And he came out of the kennel, and he knew what was going on. He knew what his job was. He had that you know, I would call it like kind of like a cocky mannerism about him. he knew exactly what was going on. He was ready for anything, and I think he understood that, you know, I'm going to be able to pull this guy around, and you know, we're going to get into some things, and I'm going to get him through it. So, you know, he was just one of those dogs that, you know, when it was time to put the collar on to go to work, he was ready to go to work. And, you know, we could, you know, we've been in, you know, we were in a lot of tight quarters, a lot of stressful situations, dangerous situations with violent offenders, armed offenders. And, you know, based on your experiences, when you're stacked up at the door, ready to make entry into a business in the middle of the night, that's, you know, there's no power to it, everything's dark, and you know that someone's in there, and it's your job to go find them. You know, doing that as a canine handler, you have all the patrol officers behind you, and it's stressful, but it's reassuring to know that they're looking upon your partner and the boss to go in there and find this person and to make sure everybody gets out safely. And, you know, there was other instances where, you know, we would be, you know, send boss in, he would find a suspect, and the suspect would decide that they wanted to fight. And, as soon as they start, you know, trying to inflict pain on your partner, you know, you feel that. And, but also the guys that you're with, your backup officers, they feel that as well. And they look at it as, hey, that's, you know, that guy's hurting one of us. He's an officer. And, you know, that's very rewarding. When you get to that level where everyone that you're with, you know, looks at your partner as, hey, he's one of us. He's gotten us in, gotten us out. You know, and that's what Boss did.
Good. You know, that's an incredible homage. You know, just for, you know, there are many people who are listening now without a law enforcement background who don't know the, you know, the intricacies of the canine. Now, where did Boss come from? What kind of dog was he?
Boss was an all-black German Shepherd. He came from Germany. When we picked him up, when he was selected, he was about 2 years old. And, you know, a lot of our work dogs are coming from Europe. There are some that are come stateside, but for our agency, primarily we're getting dogs from Europe. You know, the lineage there, they're bred for work. There's not a lot of cross-breeding. As far as, you know, you may have some health issues with dogs, and, you know, when you start trying to do it as a, to make a profit, there's some things that, you know, can happen, and the dogs can have some issues early on in life. But with the dogs over in Europe, they're basically breeding them for our profession. And, you know, we had a good breeder over there and a good source to go and pick our dogs for us. And so that's where he came from.
When, you know, when he came over, did you have to learn, was he taught in English or German for commands?
When he came over, the only thing he understood was German. Now, because our dogs were what we call green, they don't have, you know, we were teaching them the entire process. We could elect to teach him in whichever language we felt comfortable with. I elected to stay with German commands. One, he understood them, and, you know, two, it was kind of, you know, I guess in my mind, he's, you know, we brought him over here. You know, the least I can do is to keep speaking to him in the language that he kind of understands. In my own mind, I just wanted to do something for him. And, you know, I allowed myself to, you know, try to learn a little bit of German. I know dog commands in German. That's pretty much my experience with German commands. But, you know, it's nice. You know, being in Southwest Florida, we get a lot of tourists that come over from Europe for their holiday. And I've met a lot of people from Germany, and, you know, they start speaking a lot of German to me. And I just can tell them, you know, I only know a little bit of German, but they, you know, they chuckle about it.
You can say sit and attack and a few other things, right?
Right.
Not
right.
Exactly.
Yep.
Not exactly.
Exactly. Go apprehend this guy. So, yeah. So they kind of get a kick out of it. So it's you know, it's great. I mean, it's definitely one of those things that brings the public closer to us, having a canine. So
I think one of the things that, you know, for being a having a public persona somewhat, I converse with not only law enforcement officers but citizens from all over the country, especially on Facebook. And there is a love that really takes place, and a respect for law enforcement canines that I think is very, very special.
Oh, absolutely. They, like I try to present it and tell the public is, you know, any agency, any chief of police, sheriff's office, the sheriff of any agency, they are getting the best employee that they will ever have when they take on a canine unit. You know, the dog comes ready to work every day, never complains, always has a smile on their face, their tail's always wagging. You know, they're not complaining about, you know, a low salary here, or we missed our raises here, or, you know, what's going on here, my wife's mad at me, or what, you know. So these agencies they're getting the perfect employee, in my opinion. And, right. You know, the public sees it. And, you know, like I tell the new recruits, when we have new recruits, they come and ride with the canine unit for, you know, a day or two, just so that we can talk to them and explain them what to expect when we get on scene and things like that. But I always tell them, you know, if I take you to a parking lot right now into a very busy shopping mall, and I can put two or three patrol cars over in one area, and I can put one patrol canine team and have them standing outside with their dog, the public will not, you know, really focus on the three officers. They'll come over and they'll want to talk and socialize with the police canine handler. So, you know, because you have the dog, and that right there just shows that, you know, the public, they understand how special these animals are. You know, and you don't even need to have, a canine interaction from a police aspect, but, you know, you get that one mother that their child went missing, and you have a canine that went and tracked and found their child and brought them back safely. You know, they'll be forever in debt to that canine and that team and that agency. And that's where the special bond comes in. And that's why, you know, we want these dogs to be taken care of. And, you know, and we want to show that there's more to these officers, and, you know, what I call them as officers, but more to these canines than, you know, from the time they work, there's also that time when they're retired. And we still need to be taking care of these heroes, in my opinion.
How long did Boss serve with you?
He served from 2010 to 2016. He was diagnosed at the end of 2016 with cancer.
Well, and I know that one of the reasons that you created your organization is because you found that once the dog got sick, there was no care for them from the community or from the town.
Right. The thing is, and it's very prevalent, and it's nothing that the agencies are doing wrong, in my opinion. It's just one of those things that it hasn't come to fruition yet. Once the dog, they're taken care of great while they're working by our agency. You know, when Boss got sick, They could have just said, you know what, you know, we're sorry that your partner's got cancer, but, you know, unfortunately, that's a very expensive surgery, and, you know, we don't think that it's something that we should take on right now. But, you know, my agency and the majority of agencies, you know, they see the need for these dogs, and they see how special they are, and they put forth that effort. So they, you know, they gave me an additional 2.5 years by doing the surgery. But once they, you know, we couldn't bring Boss back into to full service and he was retired, you know, we signed a piece of paper that, you know, they adopted the dog to us, which I didn't want to get rid of him. I didn't want to adopt him out to anyone else. I had to do that with Matt too. And that, you know, to this day, it kills me that I wasn't there when he passed away. So my wife knew that no matter what, I was going to take Boss and he was going to come live with me. But knowing that, all the responsibility, the financial responsibility, the vet visits, the daily living, and dealing with the cancer, that came on to me. And, you know, these dogs, when they retire for one of two things. They're old, which brings on more expenses with senior wellness checks at the vet and health issues, or they are retired for medical purposes, which, again, brings on more financial responsibility to the handlers. And it's very stressful. And when I was dealing with the Boss, you know, they gave him 6 months to live. And as soon as the 6 months, he started beating the cancer and it was going into remission. But it was every month we're going in doing blood work. Every couple months we'd go back and they would do x-rays. And, you know, if one chemo treatment didn't work, then we'd have to increase the dosage. And once you increase the dose, that increases the price, and, you know, it became very expensive. So, you know, while I was sitting there, in the book, I talk about being selfish. You know, the roller coaster of emotions were just through the roof every time I went to the vet. I knew I was going to be getting a bill at the end of the vet visit, and I knew I'd be calling my wife saying, hey, you know, honey, you know, Boss is, you know, has this, his blood levels are here. We're going to increase the dose. And, you know, are we able to afford this vet visit? And, you know, she's been in law enforcement now for 21 years now. And she, you know, she has that bond too with him because Boss, his responsibility was to bring me home to our family at the end of our shift. So she knew that, you know, no matter what, we were going to find a way to pay for it. You know, but it wasn't fair for me, in my opinion, to be calling her and saying, hey, you know, can we afford this?
Sure.
Because if she was said no, then, you know, now where are we at?
Yeah.
And it's, you know, I put her in that bad situation. And, you know, I swore once this was over that, you know, I would never allow another handler, as long as I have the power to do it, to have to go through that. And, you know, and that's where we started, you know, trying to get into our foundation.
So let's talk about the foundation. When did you, so it's called the Boss Legacy.
Correct. The Boss Legacy, Inc. We started it October 25th of this year. We still have not, tomorrow is our basically our kickoff of going public. We did it through word of mouth on Facebook with friends and stuff like that. We were waiting for our local newspaper that was running a story about our foundation before we actually went full throttle, if you should, you know, if you can say that. But the amount of support that we got just from our friends and them sharing our information and stuff like that, it's going very well. You know, we're taking on, right now we're sponsoring 8 canines. And
okay, when you talk, you know, about sponsoring, well, what does that mean, sponsoring 8 canines?
Well, the way it works is we have our website set up. So retired law enforcement handlers with their canines or retired military canines. And then we also opened it up to service canines. So I have some friends that one is a retired Army soldier. He has a PTSD dog that helps him out. And then I have another friend that she has a medical service dog that helps her with day-to-day living with you know, her medical conditions. So I wanted to do something for them, because, you know, from the aspect of, you know, moving away from the law enforcement real quick, when you have a service canine, they're on a set income. Usually they're, you know, they're sure. on a disability check or something to that effect. And the gal I'm friends with, she's, you know, she's allotted a $900 a month disability check. Well, her dog's dog food is a special dog food, and it costs her upward to $100 a month. So you take $100 just to feed the dog that is needed, so you can, you know, basically survive and function in society. Now you're down to $800. Now you have to find out, you know, okay, how am I going to pay this, pay that? What am I going to do? And then, God forbid, something happens to the dog. Now they have to take him to the vet, and, you know, the vet. Vets are great, but it's expensive. It's no different than when we get sick.
Sure.
I wanted to include that.
Do you guys help to pay the medical bills for the dogs?
Yes. What we do is we are a 501c3, which is basically a federal nonprofit. We are seeking funding to take the proceeds to pay for daily living expenses, which would be the food and supplements, things like that. A lot of our police dogs, they're on supplements when they were working, and then they're also, you know, they continue on with them, joint supplements, things like that. But then we also do the end of watch services. So to give you an example, we have a Boston canine that we're taking care of that was very instrumental during the Boston Marathon bombings. We are taking care of his retired police dog. He called on Friday. The dog was showing some medical issues. He called and said, "Hey, I'm gonna take the dog to the vet." I said, "No problem. Just give me the name of the vet. I'll call them up." He brought Rue in. Dog is taken care of by the vet. I want them to be able to go in. You know, our foundation's motto basically is: you go to the vet, dog gets checked out. I want you to go grab your dog and head out the door. Don't stop at the reception table. That's our job. Your job is not to worry about that. I want you to worry about your partner, take care of them, and take care of your family, because that's an important part of your family. So they finished up. The veterinarian clinic called me. I paid for the vet visit and the medicine over the phone, and out the door they went. They didn't have to stop. They didn't have to worry about, you know, where's, you know, do I have to work an extra shift here or there, or stay away from, you know, the family. Am I going to miss something because I have to work overtime to pay for my partner's medical expenses? That's what we want to cover.
Tom, I can't tell you how impressed I am with your drive, determination, with the compassion and the kindness that you show to not only the retired canines themselves, but to the people who care so much about their dogs. How do people find you in order to donate to you?
They can do it a couple different ways. Obviously, you know, there's a lot of people that are on Facebook. If they look us up on Facebook, we have the Boss Legacy Inc. And it's you can go on there. It'll tell of everything that we have going on, the dogs we're sponsoring, and things like that. You can also reach us on our website, and that is www.theBossLegacyFL.com. And, you know, if there's any handlers out there or anyone that knows of anyone that could use our assistance, please, you know, share our information. And if, you know, some of your listeners are wanting to donate so we can continue on this, you know, our goal is to not have to be able to take care of these canines. We want the agencies to, you know, implement some type of a program to take care of these canines, even in retirement.
Absolutely.
But, you know, if I could point out just, you know, we know that this has been a very deadly year for law enforcement. You know, I believe currently, and I hope the number doesn't rise before the new year, but, you know, we've had 147 officers killed, and to that we've had 27 canines killed. And, you know, the thing with the canines being killed, it's, you know, it's very sad that our partners are sent into these situations, but the number of lives that these officers, you know, these canine officers have saved, to keep that number at 147, although very high, and we want to see that number drop and be zero next year. But
absolutely,
you know, these canines are out there on the forefront, and you know, we know as handlers that, you know, anytime we deploy our dogs, they could be killed. You know, Seagull was one, and you know, but the lives that he saved by doing what he did, you know, is something that we need to honor for all our canines that are retired. We need to take care of these dogs even up until death, and that's what we do as well. We cover their end of watch services, and you know, anything we can do. You know, and I hope the audience is listening, if they would contribute to our fund, or you know, or share the word so we can get the word out, so we can help as many officers and retired canines as possible.
Well, we're going to do everything to get the word out. That for my listeners, this is Tom Sweeney, more than a 20-year vet, a man who is dedicated to his job, to his career, and also to the canines that are serving in this country. He can be found at The Boss Legacy, FL as in Florida, .com or .org?
.com, sir.
.com. So make sure you take a look at that, and if you can contribute, please do. Tom, thank you so much for taking the time to be on the Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement today.
Thank you very much. I greatly appreciate everything you're doing as well, sir.
If you are one of my active duty law enforcement officer listeners, and you are like most of law enforcement, and you work extra jobs, you work the security job, the traffic jobs, most of the time you go through your own agency to do it. But there is another option as well, which can also lead to additional work assignments. Go to offdutypoliceofficers.com. These are my friends at Law Enforcement Specialists, and they are based out of Arizona, but they are in most of the states in the United States, and they assist you in getting those extra work assignments. The security jobs, the traffic jobs, and they work with your agency so that you're protected as well. So and also, if you're one of my listeners who actually needs off-duty police officers to work security or to work extra jobs in traffic or whatever, you can contact them as well. So go to offdutypoliceofficers.com. That's offdutypoliceofficers.com. And see about getting some extra work assignments. And they are great people. I know them very well. And they are some good folks. Or you can call them 1-888-572-2442. That's offdutypoliceofficers.com. As we start 2019, I want to tell you about something I've been working on for more than 2 years, and it is now coming to fruition. It is called The Wounded Blue, the assistance and support organization for injured and disabled law enforcement officers. I'm really excited about this. I have neglected to mention it because I wanted to wait until we had our approval as a 501c3 nonprofit. The organization is going to be a national organization to assist injured and disabled law enforcement officers who have unfortunately been abandoned or left alone by their police agencies and their cities, very often to live in poverty. I know that is hard to believe, but it is very true. We are in the fundraising portion of our existence right now, and of course we'll have to do that as long as we are an organization. But while we are getting ready to launch, it is time to start raising money for these men and women. If you would go to this website, it is www.thewoundedblue.org. Take a look at it, and there is a donate button, and we are now a 501c3, which means that all of your donations are tax deductible. I will be telling you much more about this organization as time goes by, as we launch it. And this is a very exciting time. We're going to be changing lives of many in law enforcement. TheWoundedBlue.org.
End of watch. with Randy Sutton.
At this portion of our show on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, we pay our respects to the men and women of the profession who have given their life in the line of duty. This has been a bad year already, and we're only into the first few weeks in January. I have four names to read this week. Four names, four more officers who pay the ultimate sacrifice. The first is Police Officer Clayton Joel Townsend, the Salt River Police Department Tribal Police. Police Officer Clayton Townsend was struck and killed by a vehicle while conducting a traffic stop on northbound State Route 101 just south of McDowell Road in Scottsdale, 6 p.m. He was approaching the car he had stopped when another vehicle struck him and then struck the stop vehicle. He was transported to a local hospital where he was pronounced dead. The driver who struck him admitted to texting and driving at the time of the crash. He was charged with manslaughter, aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, and endangerment. Officer Townsend had served with the Salt River Police for 5 years. He is survived by his wife and 10-month-old child. Police Officer Clayton Joel Townsend, Salt River Police, Tribal Police. End of watch, Tuesday, January 8th, 2018. The second is Police Officer Natalie Becky Corona of the Davis Police Department in California. Police Officer Natalie Corona was shot and killed after responding to a report of a three-vehicle crash near the intersection of 5th and D Streets. As Officer Corona was conducting an investigation at the collision scene, a person not involved with the crash rode up on the scene with a bicycle. As Corona spoke to one of the persons involved in the crash, the man then walked up to her, opened fire without warning, striking her. He shot her several more times after she fell to the ground before shooting randomly at other bystanders and vehicles. The subject fled into a nearby home. As responding officers searched for him, he emerged from the home wearing body armor, yelled at the officers, and then re-entered the home. He committed suicide moments later. Officer Corona was transported to UC Medical Center, where she died from her wounds. Officer Corona started her career with the Davis Police Department in 2016 as a part-time volunteer community service officer. In 2018, she attended the police academy, graduating in July. She completed her field training just 3 weeks prior to her murder. She is survived by her parents, her father, who recently retired from Colusa County Sheriff's Office. Police Officer Natalie Becky Corona, Davis Police Department, California. End of watch, Thursday, January 10th, 2019. The third is Trooper Christopher Lambert of the Illinois State Police. Trooper Christopher Lambert was struck and killed by a vehicle while investigating the scene of a prior crash on I-294 near Willow Road in Northbrook. He was en route home when he encountered the three-vehicle crash on the left shoulder and stopped to render aid. He was standing outside of his vehicle when he was struck by another car that failed to slow down or move over. A nurse who was on the scene performed CPR until rescue personnel arrived. He was transported to Glenbrook Hospital, where he was pronounced dead a short time later. Trooper Lambert was a U.S. Army veteran, served with the Illinois State Police for 5 years. He is survived by his wife, one-year-old daughter, and a parent. Trooper Christopher Lambert, Illinois State Police. End of watch, Saturday, January 12th, 2019. And the fourth is Sergeant Waitasha Carter of the Birmingham Police Department in Alabama. Sergeant Waitasha Carter was shot and killed as he and another officer attempted to arrest two men who were breaking into vehicles at a bar in the 900 block of 5th Avenue just before 2 a.m. They were in the area on a special detail as a result of a recent rash of vehicle break-ins. A plainclothes officer spotted two suspects pulling on door handles of various cars and notified Sergeant Carter, who was in uniform, and responded to the parking lot. The officer and Sergeant Carter stopped the two subjects and began to pat them down for weapons. One of the men suddenly produced a handgun and shot the officers, fatally wounding Sergeant Carter, critically wounding the plainclothes officers. One of the subjects was wounded by return gunfire before both men were taken into custody. Sergeant Carter was a U.S. Air Force veteran. He had served with the Birmingham Police Department for 8 years, previously served with the Shelby County Sheriff's Office, Leeds Police Department, and Fairfield Police for an additional 9 years. He is survived by his wife and children.
Sergeant Waitasha Carter, Birmingham Police Department, Alabama. End of watch, Sunday, January 13th, 2019. These officers all gave their lives in the line of duty for their communities. May they rest in peace.
I want to thank you for taking the time to join me on the Voice of American Law Enforcement, Blue Lives Radio. I hope that you enjoyed today's broadcast, and there is much more to come as we enter 2019. If you would, I would really love for you to visit thewoundedblue.org. That's thewoundedblue.org. It's the new support and assistance organization for injured and disabled law enforcement officers. You're going to be hearing a lot about this because this is one of the most important organizations that I've ever been involved with, and it is going to touch the lives of hundreds of thousands of law enforcement families in this country. If you are in need of talking to someone, if you are a law enforcement professional and you are troubled by post-traumatic stress, you have been injured in the line of duty and are having issues dealing with it, contact us at this organization, thewoundedblue.org. Also, check out my books, amazon.com. You'll see them all. Thanks again for joining me on Blue Lives Radio, the Voice of American Law Enforcement. We'll see you next week.